And we're live. Welcome everybody here to the Lakers. Well, this is The Hook, a part of the Lakers Lounge podcast channel, YouTube page thing. I'm Anthony Irwin, joined on this fine Friday afternoon, as I always am for these episodes of The Hook, by Pete Zayas of the Laker Film Room Pod. Pete, how you holding up?
Doing pretty well. Yeah, things are calming down a little bit with the season ending. So enjoying a bit of a slower pace and a great conference finals. How you doing, man?
Conference finals has been excellent. Like both sides of the conference have been really, really fun, like for very different reasons. And it's basically two different sports, but it's so much fun to watch this. I wish the Lakers weren't on this side of the sport as they have been since basically the 90s. And so what we're going to talk about today is how the Lakers can catch up to that version of the sport that is being played. And I think that the way that the Lakers go about doing that is to do what they do best and go star hunting, go out, get Giannis if you can, and build around him and Luka and Austin and maybe LeBron, and see what that version of the Lakers would look like. Pete, you and I have been talking about this off of the air, right, via text, and I think we both kind of hold this belief, so we'll see where this conversation takes us. A quick reminder before we do that, the show is first brought to you in part by Prize Picks. Use that promo code HMA and get $50 worth of lineups when you sign up and play a $5 lineup of your own. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Please turn on notifications both for the show and for YouTube. And then if you guys are listening to the show in the morning, please hit subscribe wherever it is that you get your podcast, preferably an Odyssey, but I do not care. All right. So we dive on in with this Giannis thing, and I want to preface this by saying I am almost always depth guy, organizational depth, roster depth, go at teams in waves, you know, but I don't know, man. I watch these conference finals, and I watch the level of basketball that is being played, and I also acknowledge that this is a gamble. Going all in for Giannis could set you way, way back if it doesn't work out. But I also think, though, that like when you have a Luka and when you're operating at a time, you know, at the onset of what appears to be Wemby's like reign, basically, like whether you go all in, either you go all in or you basically just kind of trickle money out until the end, but it all kinds of comes out to the end. And I am of the opinion that the Lakers need to lean on their strengths here, that what they are really good at is convincing stars to come to LA and to play together and to try to work that out. And that is my sales pitch to the audience. Why would you say this makes the most sense for the Lakers?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. I believe that the Lakers need a front court player who's better than Austin in order for this build to be a championship caliber team. I think they need at least like an all NBA caliber player, first, second, or third team in the front court to really compete with. If you look at the front courts of all of the teams remaining, every single one of them are paying bigs like Evan Mobley's in the 50s, Cat's in the 50s, Jared Allen even is around 30 or something like that, right? And
right.
Chet is about to get his $40 million extension per year, and Wemby, of course, right, is an MVP candidate. So I don't think the Lakers can enter that without having just somebody in the front court, right? And
yeah,
so when I look around, though, in terms of who's available, if not Giannis, then who else would it be? So I, like, of course, every pathway that the Lakers could take is fraught with danger. There's danger in going the depth route, too, right? Like, there's no version of this summer that's like, and Lakers are locked to win it all, of course. But I do think that they need to, so much of OKC and San Antonio especially, think about how many guards are in this series, Anthony. You've got Shea, Wallace, Dort, Castle, Fox hasn't played yet, but he'll play soon. Vassell, Caruso. You've got a bunch of guards in this that I think the weakness of that is if you've got an athletic front court player that can really put pressure on the rim. They got nothing for that. And we saw that in game one with Wemby, right? Where it was like, this is a guy that like trying to switch guards onto him. And they had to make an adjustment in game two and put Hartenstein on him a little bit more and all of that. But just somebody, I think we need a
front court. Rugby.
Right, right. I just think we need a front court player that other teams have to worry about. And a lot of the versions of the summer that I hear alternatives to Giannis are like a good center and a good power forward, right? But guys that are role players, not fundamentally not somebody that you're giving the ball to in crunch time. I think that bumps up Austin and his level of importance and what he has to be able to do on the ball without having that front court type of player. And so like I used this analogy earlier, like let's say we got Watson and Hartenstein for the 4 and 5. That'd be
a nice offseason.
That's a nice offseason. Good offseason. For sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if a guy like Watson signs if LeBron comes back, right? Like, does he come somewhere to not be the starter? Probably not, I don't think. But that would be a good offseason.
And does LeBron take less for Peyton Watson?
Exactly. Exactly. So if you end up replacing LeBron and DA with Watson and Hartenstein, which would be two good acquisitions, are you a contender? No, I'd even argue that you're like, you might have moved laterally, but
hopefully,
hopefully, right? And so, and even if you do bring LeBron back, let's say it's for a year, and he signs on a minimum type of deal, I do think you could compete if he decided to do that and those type of guys wanted to join. But how do you replace him after that, right? Like, I think this is the summer to do it, but it's not like you go down to the dominant front court player store and get to pick out whatever you want. So I understand, and I'm curious your thoughts on like why you think there's so much reticence toward Giannis. I think they're
that's a great question.
I think we're a bit scarred from Russ, and but I, whether it's Giannis or somebody else that I cannot think of, I just like I think that they need a guy in the front court, and he's the one guy that's available.
I think they just need a, whether it's front court guy. I mean, it's hard to do it as a backcourt guy, right? Because then Austin literally isn't starting. But I just think they need a guy who would push Austin down to the third spot on the roster. And again, I really want to come back to that topic of like why Lakers fans are nervous about Giannis in particular. Yeah. I think there's a lot going on there, a lot of meat on that bone. But actually, I was thinking about this, Pete. And I actually think that there is a cross-sport comparison to the Lakers going in for Giannis here.
Okay.
And it actually is what Mark Walter did when he bought the Dodgers. I don't know if you're aware of this, but when Mark Walter bought the Dodgers, he bought them in May of 2012. And then in August of 2012, the Dodgers traded for Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Peckett, Nick Punto, and Carl Crawford. And the kind of reason for doing it was like, this is like the big splash that we're going to make that you're going to like feel immediately, like you're going to enjoy immediately from a like watching this team play every day standpoint. But while we do that, we're also going to build out the back end of the organization, and the two like aspects of this thing are going to get built up at basically the same time. And by the time this trade is fully, you know, sussed out or whatever over the years, by the time those guys all retire or depart or whatever, the rest of the organization can kind of be built up. But this was this like shot in the arm to kind of get us through that amount of time. And now the way that it worked out, Josh Beckett's arm fell off, unfortunately, but he did have a fun, like little playoff run. He was an incredible playoff pitcher, over the course of his career. Carl Crawford was one of the more frustrating Dodgers of my lifetime of being a fan, but Adrian Gonzalez winds up being a key figure in LA sports, just like from a, like cultural Los Angeles standpoint, one of my favorite Dodgers of all time. And it did exactly basically what they wanted to do. Like it made the Lakers or the Dodgers kind of this playoff adjacent or playoff team. And they continued to build around this, and they kept on throwing money and throwing money and throwing money, which you can't quite do in the same way in the NBA, I grant. But, but like, I kind of see trading for Giannis as kind of Mark Walter's immediate kind of, all right, we're going to do this right now, but while we do this and while we navigate the Luka Giannis era, we're also going to be building the rungs of the organization that we know need to caught back up to. What do you think of that comparison?
Yeah, I definitely, you know, new ownership group is going to want to make that type of shot in the arm. And I love the point about building up the kind of the guts of the Lakers organization while that's happening. One thing to this point that if I wanted to be a Lakers are actually more in on Giannis conspiracy theorist than people realize, the hiring of Tony Bennett was interesting to me. He's the new guy that's in charge of the Lakers draft, right?
Draft consultant. Yeah.
Tony Bennett was a very good college coach at Virginia, but what he was known for was not recruiting top guys. He was actually known for finding undervalued talent, high school talent that you could turn into like top level
gritty athletes,
gritty, like, nasty type of guys. So if you were looking to have a draft or where it's say more second round talent and where you found yourself in a roster position where, hey, we're going to need a couple of guys at the back end of this roster to maybe pop off and have a Caruso Goodwin type of arc type of thing, that a guy like Tony Bennett would be help you get that rather than a, you don't like, you're not looking to draft top 10.
He wasn't like Cal, right? He wasn't like a Kentucky, like he didn't get like the superstars that you know, that Cal was responsible for. Yeah. And yet he competed really well with Cal. Like
he won a couple of championships. Yeah.
Like he was pretty freaking good. Yeah.
So yeah, that's my conspiracy theory that Tony Bennett was brought in to help find some, you know, undrafted type of guys and things like that. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
No, I'm sure I think even like building on that point, one of the things, or maybe the thing, honestly, that makes the Dodgers the superpower that they are is it's really rare. Like I would really have to think long and hard about it to find an acquisition that the Dodgers didn't get the most out of, right? Like, you know, all right. So the best example, right? Like the biggest acquisition that the Dodgers have made since Mark Walter got there is Shohei Ohtani. And he has won a couple of MVPs and stuff like that. And that was before he really started pitching. And now he is pitching and batting. And not only is he now his hitting isn't where it needs to be this season, but his ERA, I think, is like 0.85 or 0.86.
Insane.
Which is fucking ridiculous, right? Like, and you, like you can go through like any number of acquisitions. Like he's the reason that I bring him up is because like his pitching was always solid when he was with the Angels. He was always a good pitcher, had great stuff, but like he needed to take another couple of steps forward to be really like a Cy Young level type pitcher. And there was always this question like, well, he'll always be like a pretty good pitcher to even like a really good pitcher. And he's going to be an incredible batter, right? And that's kind of how his value was going to play out. But now he's like an incredible pitcher. And the idea is that eventually he's going to get back to at some point becoming an incredible batter. And now you have this elite presence at the top of your roster on both sides of the ball. And that is something that like the Dodgers have really been working with him on and maximizing that talent. And you can kind of go through, Yamamoto has gotten better since he got to the Dodgers. Roki Sasaki was somebody who like was kind of middling, and then they turned him into a closer for the playoff run last year. And then now they're trying to bring him back and make him this better starting pitcher. You could go through like role players that they built out. Max Muncy is the guy at third base right now. Justin Turner before him. You had and like for the Dodgers, what they've basically done is like, all right, everybody who comes into this organization, you're going to get better. Like that's just the expectation, and we expect that of ourselves as much as we expect it out of you. And like for the Lakers, if you go out and you basically say, all right, what the Lakers are excellent at right now, like the bones of this house is go out, get superstar, right? They got LeBron, they got Anthony Davis, they got Luka Doncic. Now let's continue to lean on that strength here. And then by way of investment in, you know, like the Dodgers invested into the various levels of their organization, now you're going to maximize this Lakers team's version of Max Muncy, of Kike Hernandez, of, like right now, the guy, Andy Páez, their center fielder right now, is just completely broken out. And that's how like the Lakers become like the basketball equivalent of what the Dodgers are. But I think it has to start by that trade here of bringing in a Giannis so that you can give yourself the time and the leeway to also work on that other stuff while everybody is kind of focused on what that team would look like.
What do you say to the point that the Lakers already have their guy to build around and that they've already got that cornerstone, you know, superstar type of talent, and that you actually need to fill in the team around him with supporting players rather than yet another player that's sort of a similar ilk?
I would say that in this era, one superstar isn't nearly enough. Like you look at San Antonio, that they aren't superstars quite yet, but they're eventually going to be superstars. Stephon Castle's going to be a superstar. Dylan Harper doing this as a rookie typically means that dude's going to get ridiculously good over the course of his career. And then fucking Wemby. And then, you know, you look at OKC, right? Chet is still relatively young. Shea is like in his prime. Those guys are superstars and all-stars. And I really like Austin. I don't think he's ever going to be considered like a superstar. So I think they need another superstar. And I think but I also think though, critically, you need a superstar who compounds the talents of the guy that you already have. And this is where, like, we segue to why Lakers fans are a little nervous about Giannis, is because there is this question as to whether or not Giannis will actually play basketball in the way that he needs to make himself better and to make Luka better. Right.
What do you think that means?
It means pick and roll, means setting screens. We just saw in Milwaukee that team run up against a glass ceiling because they didn't run pick and roll nearly enough with Dame and with Giannis. And he wanted to become this point forward and all this stuff. And they put a ceiling on themselves with him being the point forward. And I think if he is going to work with Luka, he needs to be a pick in either roll or short roll type of presence who gets downhill and destroys teams' worlds. And that's where, like, I think Lakers fans, I actually just did a radio hit right before this, and the host there was like, I don't know about another superstar. What about the egos and all this stuff? And I think that is a very fair concern here with Giannis. And I think that's where Rob really has to put on his salesman hat, really needs to become an agent for the Lakers here and pitch this world where, hey, you can go be the guy in Miami. You can go be the guy in Boston. You can go be the guy wherever it is that you wind up. And your team is going to be pretty good. But if you come here and you set screens and you play the way that we need you to play, and this is what the Dodgers do, by the way. Mookie Betts is currently playing shortstop. He was a right fielder his whole career. Yeah. So like Rob basically says to Giannis, hey, if you come here and you commit to these things, not only are we good, we're going to be great. So do you want to be involved in greatness, right? And I think that's the pitch that has to be made there. Now, will that be committed to when the chips are down at all times?
Yeah,
I don't know. But like, God, I'm sorry, I'm filibustering here. But like, that was a concern we had with this team, right? Is everybody going to be committed to all the little things that they need to do with their contract status where it was last season, right? Rui, Smart, Ayton, Austin, LeBron, they all, like, to JJ's credit, I think this is probably the thing that he was probably best at this year, was managing those situations and managing, hey, if we're going to be where we need to be, you need to commit to this, 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 and this. And I think if he can do that with Giannis, and if Luka can help him do that with Giannis and LeBron can help him do that with Giannis, I think that's the best version of this Lakers team here moving forward. But we've texted about this. That's the biggest question mark here.
For me, it's not the pick and roll element of Giannis is fairly unimportant to me, frankly. Mm. And it's not at all really a part of my interest in pairing him with Luka. It's the same role that Giannis has always played. Like the idea that he's going to be a role guy for Lillard. Like, first off, Luka is a whole different animal than 34-year-old Damian Lillard,
absolutely.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
He was at that time. Secondly, like, Giannis is a point forward. They didn't, like, just experiment with that year. That's who been and who he's always been. And my thought is that you have two guys that you generally give the ball to in any given lineup. If you've got three guys that are really good at it, it means that you can do that for 48 minutes. And then you've got part of the game where all three are on the floor. And that's very, provided that you can play enough defense that you can add that. But for most of the game, my idea with Luka and Giannis is that you've got arguably the most dominant off the dribble from the perimeter attack with your jump shot type of threat, right? Both that and get to the rack with size, but then the most dominant around the rim threat in the whole game, just in terms of the power and force that you can put there. My biggest concern from a fit standpoint between the two is actually what you do at the five spot. You know, Luka wants that roll guy lob threat, and Giannis needs maybe a spacing five. I do think that if you go that route, your five is actually more similar to a JaVale McGee type of role, where what you do is you close with Luka and Giannis at the five, basically. Luka, Giannis, Austin, and two guys that can defend and knock down threes. And you've got yourself a pretty good team right there. Let's say Marcus is one of them. I think you're missing one more spot right there. Yeah, we were talking about that last night, right? Imagine Bron on a minimum on that team. But with Giannis, I actually view him more as an on-ball type of player. And that's one thing. The Lakers' ball handling is so consolidated into three players. Think about how we played last year. It was like if LeBron, Luka, or Austin didn't have the ball, very few of the other guys could do anything. That's a huge difference between us and other teams. And so there is that route to just like get two or three guys, of which a guy like Peyton Watson is one of them, that has some he can attack off the dribble or grab and go in transition, and you've got a little guy in open space, he can attack that. You never see Rui do that. That's not something DA or Jackson can do. So that is a way to go. But my thought with Giannis, I do think that down the stretch of games and when you want to play two-man game, there's an aspect of that. But the role man aspect of him is actually not how I view him at all. I view him as an on-ball player, as the guy who he's always been.
Yeah, I think I would say you need, in order to get him to buy into being a Laker, that needs to be a carrot, right? Is you can't just say, hey, for 48 minutes, you're going to set 53 screens and become Clint Capella, right? Even DeAndre Ayton wasn't interested in that. But I think all of the Lakers' best sets, if you look at it at the end of the year, and the thing that created the most open shots would be two-man game, whether with Luka and Giannis or Austin and Giannis. Mm-hmm. And that's something that he has been somewhat reticent to do over as his career has gone on. And I think if there's any hesitancy on his part willingness to do that, I would say that, the depth path and all that stuff makes the most sense. But I also think too, I think you made this point either on your show. Yeah. I think it was on your show with Darius, talking about this offseason, and you were talking about how if you focus too heavily on depth against teams that have been able to build their depth through tanking, and their depth is lottery picks that are all coming into their own at the same time, you're not going to out-depth OKC. You're not going to out-depth San Antonio. And I think the Lakers, especially if we go back to that comparison here with the Dodgers have manufactured depth with guys like Muncy, with guys all throughout their organization. But don't get it twisted. The reason that the Dodgers are the Dodgers is because of Shohei and Mookie and Freeman and all these guys. And I think that's where Lakers fans, and I think just kind of internet GMs in general, kind of overthink some stuff. Is at the end of the day, basketball is won by superstars. That's who wins the shit. And to me, when I watch OKC and I watch San Antonio, I don't watch that and say, man, if the Lakers could just get better with the back third of their rotation. No, they need to get better at the top of the rotation. And then by pushing guys down the rotation, improve their depth. And I think that's something that Giannis or whatever the player that the Lakers, here's what I'll say. If it isn't Giannis now, I think they would be wise to spend or to eventually land at superstar who pushes Austin down and pushes the rest of the depth down. The reason that I'm kind of zoned in or zeroed in on Giannis right now is just because of the situation that he's currently in, where like New York's, I don't think is interested. Like I've been kind of asking around and I think New York is really kind of focused on their core. Miami, I guess they're interested, but like, I don't know. Like, I don't think Milwaukee is desperate to get Khalil Ware or Bam Adebayo. And then, like, you know, Minnesota, I think, is the one team here that I think is desperate enough and has the pieces to make that a more viable trade. But if you're Milwaukee, do you want Julius Randle's contract? Do you want Rudy Gobert's contract? Like, I think here for the Lakers, if you can, like, the Lakers could theoretically here, Pete, and this is something that I full credit to you because you were in on this before anybody else. The Lakers could turn zero players or like maybe like a new Thero and I don't know. I don't even like, I think it would be like, would it be Vando? I think they need to send out another contract to make the math work, but very few members or basically no members of their rotation. They could turn just space into Giannis. That is a really unique spot that you don't see in the NBA anymore. And that is essentially what the Dodgers did back in the day with that Carl Crawford, Adrian Gonzalez, Josh Beckett trade. Was like, look, we have money. Boston needs to shed a bunch of their own. Just come on over here. We'll add you to this. We'll see what this turns out. And then, you know, build. That's essentially like what the Lakers have the ability to do here. And I don't think you're going to, I'll say that I don't think you're ever going to get this type of opportunity ever again.
Yeah,
you know, it would require too many machinations all lining up at the same time.
No doubt about that. And like superstars and front court superstars will come available every couple of years for sure. And the Lakers want to be in on that. But I'm very much of the mindset now, Anthony, of now. We have Luka Doncic at 27 now. Years old. Like we need to win. Like, I was talking to Darius earlier. He was talking about 5 to 7 year windows. And I'm thinking, I'm like, 3 years. We have a 3 year window, really. That's what the NBA, I don't think that those really long windows even exist anymore in the NBA in terms of building a team.
Not in the CBA. God,
right. No. Right. And so that's not to say that Giannis is the only way that you can get to the importance of being the best team that you can now. But I think that's very important for the team to not just kind of kick the can down the road and get incrementally a little bit better, because that's when like your window passes with Luka. He's going to be 30, 31 in the blink of an eye and hopefully still with the Lakers and still dominant. But these are the years, man, when you've got a guy like Luka to really capitalize on that. And so if you believe that you need a front court star caliber player, like I believe they do, like there's no time like the present. You've got a guy that's like one of the most dominant in the game. There's really only a couple of guys even he's shoulder to shoulder with like Wemby and Jokic. But this is Giannis. He's one of the real dragons of the game. So it's like, if not him, then I'd love to hear the ideas for somebody else. The depth argument does not inspire me. Like all of the different versions of the roster that I've seen. Now, who knows? Like we'll see what the team actually comes up with if they do go that route, and if LeBron's back, especially if you can add some legit talent to last year's team while keeping what you already had. Okay, yeah, we start to get, if there's enough of it. I think it's hard to do financially, but they can swing that. Cool. But yeah, man, I do think they need that type of guy, and there's one available.
The LeBron part of this is where I think it just completely puts it over the hill for me. Okay. And this is something that like you really need to swing for the fences on. Look, remember a couple of years back when they were talking about his most recent pay cut, you know, and what he was willing to take a pay cut for, and the players that he was willing to do that for was like Klay Thompson, James Harden, I think DeMar DeRozan, and then hilariously Jonas Valanciunas.